Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports. Live from Las Vegas, Nevada. I want to welcome everybody to the show. You can catch us live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. here at onwheelsnow.com. If you miss any shows, you can always click on the blue underline On Wheels Now link at onwheelsnow.com and check out any past shows. Got a great show lined up for you tonight. Hosting along with myself tonight is J.J. Nunn. I didn't say the one and only this time, but you are the one and only J.J. Nunn.
Good evening, of course.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, fantastic. Cool. Absolutely fantastic.
Sweet.
Great guests in the studio. Yeah, so
exactly.
I'm always happy.
Of course, also hosting tonight, the man on a mission, Gary Wyatt.
How you guys doing?
What's the new mission, man?
Hey, I can't tell you.
Can't tell you? It's always
a secret.
Usually the last one to know. Okay. Of course, the guest tonight, kind of a last minute. Yeah. Set up for us tonight, Dennis Rock Jr., icon out at the LVMS Bullring. If you've been to the track, you've heard or seen Dennis Rock Jr. How you doing, man?
We're good tonight.
Great.
It was definitely a last-minute thing. He called up and I said, okay, I can be here.
Hey, we appreciate it. Of course, you brought your shadow along, good or bad, Buzz. Just goes by Buzz. Do you dare ask for more?
No, that's all it needs to be is Buzz. That's what everybody knows.
Everybody knows Buzz is Buzz. So
his real name is Greg, but when we call him Greg, everybody says, "Who's that?"
Who's that? He don't even look at you when you call him Greg, does he? So cool. Hey, thanks, Dennis, again for being here. I know it's last minute, but I really do appreciate you being here.
And by the way, Dennis, you can thank Phil Goodwin for this. Good or bad, you can still thank him.
That's okay. It's good.
Hey, it's been a while since we had Phil on, too.
Yes.
We got
he's scared.
He's scared.
Running somewhere else. He's running for
the
hills.
He's turning other people into us.
Yeah.
But
when I call him and ask him if he wants to come on, he's like, well, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this guy?
Phil's looking for a referral fee.
That's what he's looking for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He gets 10% of the referral fee, which is zero.
That's right.
Nothing from nothing we need. Nothing.
He still gets 10% of that.
Actually, he would pay us. Right?
That's right. I tried to get him to help us pit on the open cop, but he didn't want to do that either. So maybe he's still on the referral.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of the open comp, if you were watching any racing, we had some great racing out here at LVMS this past weekend. I guess they're not really an open comp is what they're calling it anymore. They're calling it the Senators Cup Fall Classic. Same thing. It's the open comp as we used to know it.
That's what all of us have been around for a while call it.
Right.
It's the Senators Cup now. We struggled all weekend. It was a very long weekend for
now,
us.
Now, when you say we, who all are you talking about?
Our team. It was
Buzz.
Jed Buzz. Justin Johnson.
Struggled, yeah.
Tony.
So who's on your team? So you're yourself.
Justin's our driver.
Justin.
And I actually stepped out of the driving suit this year, and we had Justin drive it. We had to put together a plan this year our plan was to win the championship, which we probably accomplished half of it because we got the track championship. We just missed it on the state championship. But we at least got halfway there.
Well, that's good. I didn't realize you guys were kind of going for state championship points also.
Yeah, and we just missed that a little bit. We had a lot of issues this year, a lot of problems with motors, and it was a long year. But our team basically was Justin was driving, his friend Tony was doing our tires, and then Buzz is our main mechanic. And then I'm pretty much doing the majority of the setup stuff and providing all the finances.
Right. So you're the
So you're broke.
and the brain.
It was a long year.
When you start talking about motors, you're going broke.
Well, you know, you guys couldn't have picked a better person than Justin Johnson to sit in that driver's seat, because that is one talented driver, let me tell you. He can make anything look fast, let me tell you. He's a great driver.
He makes it look easy.
He does, you know, and I, you know, and it was some good strategy going in. Considering you guys are having a lot of issues, and he was not his own problem, not his own fault, but got into a few altercations throughout the night, and using the hot pit lane to kind of fix things and get the car back on track, and it was working until obviously the final wreck that you guys had.
The final one, we didn't have any place to go.
Yeah, but you know, man, that brings up an issue with me anyways, is up in that between 3 and 4, when they originally had, when the guy blew the motor and spilled oil on the track, I seen oil on the track still. They threw some speedy dry down, but they still had, at least from my view, still looked like it had
there was still a lot of stuff up there, and we had the not so friendly driver push us up there on purpose to spin us out,
kind of get you up in the
place. Somebody who wasn't too happy with us from some incidental contact earlier in the race pushed us up there, and just one of those things. But the track was not clean up there to begin with.
Oh, yeah. That's at least from my point of view, I saw the same thing. But
usually they brush it in and take their time. And
did they
brush that portion of it in at all? Or?
I'm going to say no. I think on this situation, they were trying to get the they had time as the factor. They were trying to speed up the time, but I think if they would have spent the time, they would have saved time going in. You know, this was before the 75 lap break when I think the final wreck you guys had anyways.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then during the break, they did go up and they cleaned that area a little bit more.
and it needed it.
It definitely needed it.
The track wasn't any good up there.
But, you know, it sucks that happens, you know, to a racing incident, I guess, when you look at it.
Well, like I said, we struggled with getting the car up to speed the whole weekend. We had a decent car. We had a car good enough to run in the top 5. We just never got there. But that's part of how that race goes. you gotta be there at the end to get there.
Right, and again, like I said, it looked like your strategy was working. You know, you gain a few spots. I don't know whose call that was, but you come in, make some adjustments, fix a few things, come back out during the caution so you're not losing any laps during that time. So you always still have a chance to be in it, because you had a whole another 75-plus laps to go. It's a long race. There's a lot of time left to get back and do something. And anybody knows that Justin Johnson can do it if you give him the chance. So,
unfortunately, the people that were racing against, they knew that also.
Yeah,
and they were playing that strategy a little bit also to help keep us towards the back.
Unfortunately, I guess that's one thing when you have a driver like that, or you know, or anyone that has any kind of talent like that. If you get them pushed to the back, you're going to find more guys wanting to keep them there than letting them by, unfortunately.
That happens.
Did you miss being out in the race at all? Or, you know, I mean, that's something that you've raced in the past.
I missed it all year.
Does that change your kind of what you're doing next year, possibly?
I haven't decided yet, but it's definitely on the agenda.
What made you get out of the car to begin with? Dennis, and for those who don't know, we have Dennis Rock, driver, former driver, or driver of the number 61 super late model out at LVMS. What was it that made you decide to step out this year and put Justin in?
Part of it was I wanted to help get my motor better, JMS engines, some more publicity with a better driver, and get our engine program more to the front. But also I had to have my knee replaced in December.
Oh, that'll do it.
I didn't know that I was going to be 100%.
Okay.
And I mean, it's hard getting in and out of the car as it is. But
yes,
but
I can identify with that.
But with a new knee, it's not a whole lot easier either.
No, not if you're getting in and out of the car. With
it's a brand new knee. It's like putting on a new car part. Come on.
And it's still not all there yet, but it's definitely better.
It should be. It should be all there. He's using it as a crutch. He did race some this year. He raced in Madeira.
I was going to say that. I saw your name pop up, and I looked, and I thought it was Madeira.
We went to Madeira. We raced there 5 times, and there was some really good racing, and it benefited him in a lot of different ways, racing that other track.
Was that the first time you raced Madeira?
It's the first time I went down there, and the competition there is very, very tight. Yeah. And it's a lot different track to race on, and I learned a lot driving down there.
Is that something you may have sparked something to want to do more often, is that travel up to maybe other tracks?
I like going there a lot, and I would definitely like going back there. And I planned on racing there more this year till we started having motor problems, and then it got to be too much to try to spend to go there. But, I mean, it's expensive to travel. But winning the championship here was a priority, and then it got to be where, you know, going to Madeira was a secondary thing. And the other thing is John Keller's boy, Kyle, is racing up there in the junior late models.
Right.
And we were going up there to help support his program and help his boy run up there. And that was the initial reason I was going up there, to help.
I see.
To drive the track and help figure out the setup for his car. But once I started having motor issues here, then I had to quit going because I couldn't afford it.
Right.
And I needed to keep my program here going also. So it was kind of a twofold thing for going up there. And we did learn some things, and plus I learned some things for my own driving. But I wasn't able to help him out as much down there as I wanted to this year.
Who'd you have spotting for you in Madeira?
Actually, I had Buzz did some of it, but I also had Brian Kaiser down there.
Okay.
And Brian Kaiser is a great spotter.
Some people don't realize, like, if they're not in a division that requires spotters, how important a spotter really is, you know, to help. It's just in all different areas. It's amazing.
And it changes on a race-by-race situation also. Even, like, for the Open Comp, the Senator's Cup thing, it's a whole different level at
right.
that race because, I mean, you have people like Derek Thorne that, I mean, they bring a whole different level there.
Oh, yeah, like you said, Derek Thorne racing the SRL, you know, Southwest Tour Spears,
yep.
Southwest Tour Series. You have Lenny White that's, won there 2-3 times here locally. He just has our track pinned with his late, you know,
Dawson,
his late model.
Jeremy Doss,
brand new car, bought out of the, man, that thing was a bullet to begin with before he even showed up.
We actually got some help from Lenny White in our setup for the 17 car at the beginning of the year. And it helped a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But those guys bring the whole racing to a different level for this race.
That's something else. It's a good show they put on. You know, I wish I'd seen more people in the spectator stands. It was a little bare, more bare than I thought it should have been. But, you know, hey, that's something to be worked on in the future. I know, you know, sometimes that's the hard part to work on, is getting fans in the stand, you know.
I don't think the weather helped us out too much for the early part.
It was windy on Friday night.
Friday night wasn't too good.
Yeah.
And I know I heard a lot of advertisement for it,
yeah.
So I don't think there was a lack of getting the word out.
Right.
But it's been an issue for the later part of this year on getting stands and people in the stands, and I don't know what the
right.
fix is for that.
Yeah, I think that's the big question for a lot of people at a lot of different tracks, not just here at Vegas, you know. So, hey, Buzz, what was your point of view here at this past race? I mean, you probably didn't get any rest, did you?
Well, rest was limited. We had to work our tail off. We had to get everything finished along with everyday work that you go to Monday through Friday, and our work to work on the cars
sure.
afterwards, and taking days off and stuff
Well, people don't understand. You're not just working on the cars at the track. This is more than a track thing. There's long nights working on the car in the shop, too, and that's some of what
Wednesday,
you're talking about.
We worked all night Wednesday till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
On Thursday morning, and then went and slept for an hour and a half, came back to the shop, finished up everything, got loaded up so we could get out to the track.
See, the smart guy here is Dennis. Oh, my knee's bothering me. I'm going to be inside, okay?
I think I might have slept an hour. But
right.
Generally, lately, we've been working about 60 hours a week on our regular job to be able to afford this. And then we come home and work on the cars after that. And we've been having quite a few motor issues. We've been having some dry sump oil failures.
Wow.
And not motor problems, but just oiling system failures. So, like, we had a motor problem on our primary car for the last points race. So we had to get that motor fixed for this race.
Hmm.
And we got it in time to get it ready for this race. And then we found some issues with the car when we get there that were a problem Thursday. And we didn't find it till late Friday night.
Oh, wow.
So we got to bring the welder and get everything worked out Friday, just in time for the last practice on Friday.
So instead of being able to work on setup or anything, you're fixing problems.
Yes,
which is valuable time, unfortunately. But
we did get it to where the car was very competitive for Friday. We planned on having time to get it better, but not quite as good as we wanted to be.
You know, it didn't look too bad. Again, you got a guy like Justin Johnson in the driver's seat. He can, you know, he adjusts. You know, we've talked about that. He's been on the show in the past, and of course, he's the type of driver. Sometimes maybe it's a cripple for him because he can adjust easily to even an ill handling car. But that's a good combination. You know, if you got some times where you can't really get the setup where you want it to be, and you got a driver that can adapt, I mean, that's a good combination.
He was actually kind of happy with it, considering what it started out with Saturday on Thursday, because we actually had the third link mount break out of the car.
Wow.
It was completely busted out of the car Thursday, and we didn't find it till late Friday night.
No kidding.
And we had to weld it all back in and then get it all back adjusted, and we had been trying to adjust it to a broken car.
So you start scratching your head like, how much time did we waste?
Mm-hmm. he was pretty happy with the car when we got it on the racetrack. It's just all those things make you kind of anxious, and I think he got a little impatient when we actually got on the racetrack.
Right.
And we started in a pretty good spot then we kind of got shoved out, and talking to my motor guy, you know, he's like, yeah, all those guys know who he is, and they pushed him out there and then slowed down the inside line so he'd stay stuck out there.
Yeah, and, you know, it worked.
Yes, it did.
Justin has a championship, and
guess
what? They know it. They're coming to town. He's got a target on his car. He's the fast one here. He's the one that we need to beat. And, I mean, it doesn't even have to go through the pits. All right? Watch out for the 17. What, you know, it's just the 17. Okay, fine. He's out there. Leave him out there. Don't give him a chance.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it's not hard to do on our track. You know, you get freight trained if you get stuck out more than one or two laps. So
real quick, you're out of the groove. Yeah. You're gonna get trained, like you said.
Of course, if you're just joining us, we have Dennis Rock Jr. here with us tonight. Of course, his shadow tonight, Buzz. Thanks again, you guys, for being here, Dennis. You've been at the track a long time. If anybody's been able to the Bullring, they know you've been out the track for a long time. Tell us your starts out there. When did you start going out to LVMS? The Bullring is what we're talking about, the short track.
I started racing in 96.
Now, did you what brought all that on? I mean, how did you decide, hey, I'm going to jump into a race car?
How did it all start?
Were you spectating, or what was the start of it all?
I started watching racing when I was a teenager at Craig Road.
Okay.
I used to watch Dick Cobb and Dick Alessani race out at Craig Road. They actually used to have a thing called spectator drags out at Craig Road where you could go drive your car on the track for one lap against somebody else.
That's pretty cool.
I'd like to see that. That was very entertaining, and it was actually kind of fun. It was probably one of the things that helped get the spectators involved.
Wow.
And it's probably one of the things that helped bring people to the track.
I think back then everybody wasn't as Sue happy, so
that too.
Insurance costs are way high nowadays.
They used to do that back east.
You were mentioning that before.
The world was definitely a different place then.
Right.
But
so did you end up doing that? Did you get on the track with your regular car? Was it your wife's car?
No, it was with a truck.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you, this is your second wife, because if you took your first wife, no.
With a 73 Chevy truck.
Oh, that's cool. How'd you do?
First race, I had somebody with a Porsche running to me.
Oh, wow.
And then actually one of the races I won with that truck, but it had a motor in it.
What do you do in a situation like that when you wreck on the track? I mean, you sign a waiver, I'm sure.
He actually just ran into the back of it so he could get by. And the track people are saying, did he run into you? I said, yes, he did. It's like, well, we'll let you run again, but we'll not let you run against him.
Right.
I think they were worried I was going to hit him. And I had a truck.
You had a bigger vehicle.
Yeah. Yes, I did. With a lot of bumper.
So that's cool. So that was your first taste of actually being on the track, huh?
Yep. And I had always been interested anyway.
Do you have buddies like telling you, hey, man, go do this. You got to get out there.
My brother-in-law used to race a car with pretty much like a bomber at that track. And we helped him out with that some.
Cool. And you think that was about 90?
That
was Craig Road. You're talking way earlier.
I didn't start. I started racing here at the Bullring in 96.
And Craig Road, obviously, that was in the 80s.
That was long before then. Hmm. I mean, shoot, that was probably 79, 80.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
That was long ways back there. That was back when Jerry Green raced out there. And
Mad Hatter.
The Mad Hatter. Yep. There was a lot of different people racing then.
Phil Mann.
I think Phil Hayes.
Phil Hayes.
Mann. Actually raced.
Schumacher. He used to run with the Ultimates.
So did you end up going into an actual race car at Craig Road, or is that been on that track?
That the only time I raced there was in my own personal car.
When that Porsche hit him.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is it. Yeah,
pretty much.
Did you show up every Saturday after that saying, is that Porsche here?
Is he here?
that was actually the only time I was on that track.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
They didn't race too much longer after that, before they ended up closing the track.
Right.
How old were you then?
I'm thinking it was probably around 18.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Cool.
But I used to like to go there and watch all the racing. I actually was relatively new into the air conditioning business then. I used to go to Dick Adesanya's shop. They called them the Grand American Modified they used to race in. It was a lot different type of a car.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
Similar. I mean, it was a similar class to the cars we're driving now, but not anywhere close on the technology. I mean, it was supposed to be the same class, but not even close.
That's crazy. So here at LVMS, you started, what, 96-ish?
I started around 96. It was in a car that is something like I think the super stocks are now.
Yeah.
Chargers.
I think they were called hobby stocks back then, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not.
It was
not
actually.
Sure. They had
limited late models.
Okay, they had the Sportsmans, then the limited late models or something. Yeah.
They called it limited late model then. Then they decided there was too much cheating going on, so they just eliminated the class for a year and came back as a hobby stock.
Oh, yeah.
And they came back with, you can't do anything to them, and now they're back up pretty much to the same thing they were as a limited late model, which is what always happens to it.
A big cycle, yeah, like a four-year cycle it seemed like back then.
You come back, they take them away, and now they come back with cast iron manifolds and two-barrel carburetors and cast iron intakes, and now they're back to aluminum intakes and headers, and it's the same car again.
That's funny. So that's what you raced back then?
Yes.
Did you make it, build it,
I bought it used from Pat Petrie. The first time it was ever on the track, Dan Schools, we called him the Squirrel.
Schools.
up my left front tire,
oh.
Shot him straight up in the air, flipped over upside down, and I said, this is going to be bad. Landed upside down, and he hated me every day after that.
Well, so that was your
good old Dan Schools.
The first day I was ever on the racetrack.
That's crazy. So you made enemies right away. So
first one on the track.
Welcome to the
racing.
This is not a good way to start out.
Yeah, I remember Dan's school. His suspension looked like didn't have any. It looked like it was on. I don't know.
It was a black 51.
Yes.
Black and yellow. Black 51.
Black and yellow.
All I know is, I was in the back, and I was outside, and I said, this is my lane. I'm not moving. And he came up. I was like, what do you got to come up here for? There's lines down there.
Right. You got plenty of room down below.
There's a whole racetrack over there. You got to run into me?
It sounds like me. I'm on the white line. I'm down here.
So nothing's changed.
You got two other lanes. You got two other lanes. Go around.
And now I would say, you know, it's not that important for me to stay right here.
So that was your first experience with another racer on the track, and then you were hooked or what? You just liked that division? You stayed into it?
I stayed in that division for a while. It's, I probably would have been there longer, except that the guy that I had as a crew chief would push me to get into a super late model heat.
Do you have any other family out there racing at the same time?
No. I was pretty much the only one driving race cars.
Okay.
Nobody else had the interest in it. I think my brother was helping me at the time.
Okay.
None of them like to drive fast the way I do. we always
adrenaline junkie.
We always well, that's what they always said, you know, police officer, adrenaline junkie, drive fast cars, all that kind of stuff. but we always played around with motors on our street cars and stuff like that, but I always wanted to go drive the race cars on the racetrack.
Now when you got on the track, did you think, wow, this is totally different than I thought it was going to be, the way the setups were, the way...
Well, I knew it was very hard.
Yeah. It looks easy. The people, I used to hear people in the stands all the time, oh, I'm going to bring my Camaro out there and I'm going to do this. And it's not that easy. It's a lot of stuff you got to do to go in circles.
Yes, there is. I used to always say, I had an 88 Firebird that I drove on the street. I said, if I could make my race car handle as good as this, it'd be great.
It'd be no problem, right?
And then I got to the super lights. I said, okay, I have one that works better than that now. And it's still not good enough.
You know, that's one thing, like going from a super stock, is I guess what they're calling today, but into a super late model division, you have a lot more to work with to put it more in the driver's hands, I guess, than the...
There's a lot more car there, and the adjustments are easier to make, but there's a lot of them.
So you can easily go the opposite direction.
You can adjust yourself out of it in a hurry.
Right.
So the longer you're at it, the more you know what general area you need to be in, but it definitely helps to try to get information from as many sources as you can, but by the same token, not everybody talks to everybody.
Right. Or they tell you just enough to get you in trouble.
Well, and you know, by the same token, everybody's using different parts.
Sure.
And the same measurements and the same angles and the same setups don't always work with different parts.
That's true.
They don't work sometimes with identical cars.
Exactly.
You can have you know, what you're feeling as a driver might be something completely different for another driver.
Even you have three cars and you put the same setup on all three of them, three different drivers, and that setup doesn't work with the – it's not just the driver combination. It's a driver-car combination. Each car has its own little theme, just like every hound dog has its own sound. You can tell each one. Each motor has its own sound. You can tell when each motor fires up. No matter if they rebuild it, it's got a different sound every time.
I remember when I first started racing in the super late class, Dick Cobb was still racing out there. And I used to, and I had talked to him at here and there when I started racing, getting little bits of information on some things. And it used to impress me how sometimes you wouldn't see him at practice and he'd show up and his car would be good every time.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, how does he show up and qualify in the top five every night?
Exactly.
And then there's been a few races this year where we're busy putting the car together, and like we'd show up and practice and the motor would break. So we're over there busting butt and doing all the stuff. So we get to the racetrack in time to qualify, and Justin puts it on the pole. I'm like, I think I know how he did it. And there's a bunch of other people in the track that I know are mad because we go out there and we put it on the pole and then we win the same night.
Right.
So I'm like, I see these guys and said, I bet those guys are over there saying, how do those guys do that?
Exactly, right. It's going to be in that position, though, right? Looking back from the early days.
Yes, it is.
Cobb and Mike Ray, some of them guys would just show up.
Seat time.
No doubt.
It was definitely an interesting feeling to actually be the person that could go out there and do that.
When you first got into the Super Lates, have they changed much from that time till today? I noticed, looking at the rules, I've seen a wider motor packages that they allow nowadays, but have you seen a lot of differences?
I don't know. The rules have changed some. My cars have changed because I've been able to afford better cars.
Right.
When I first started, the cars I drove were not the best because it was, as I've been racing longer, I've collected more parts that were better parts.
Right.
Because I'm not the guy that can go out and buy a $200,000 car in 1 year.
Right.
So I have to buy, parts over several years, and now I have a $200,000 car.
Right, exactly. Over time, yeah, it's like putting a square of a lawn in your yard, and then over time, finally, you got a full lawn.
Exactly. So the quality of the car that I have now is a better car than I started out with, and some of them. I mean, one of the cars that I had up until about 3 years ago was one of the first cars I ever had. And we had changed the front clip on it, but the rest of the car was the same car. It was a car that Chuck Wall built, and it was a copy of something else that he built in his shop. And it wasn't somebody's this or somebody's that. It was a car that somebody I knew that knew how to build a chassis built in his shop.
But it's something that I guess could work, right? An older car if you make the right changes. I know Gafferini's had adjustments on some old cars.
That car, yes, it's like 17 years old or something. Yeah. He has like 49.
But is it really?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Is it really? Okay.
Yes, it is.
I
worked in his shop and I worked on that car.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
And it's still the same car.
Yeah, one of the cars that he has, it's one of the original cars that he had when Fletcher Jones sponsored it.
Is that pretty crazy?
That goes back to 98, 99, and 2000.
And there's a few chassis builders that will tell you that is a piece of steel. It only knows what you tell it to know.
Yeah.
It'll do what you tell it to do. And then whatever you can tell it to, it will do.
A lot of truth to that.
But the difference now there's some new stuff coming out, like what Derek Dorn had and Jeremy Doss. The technology in those cars, it's a lot different.
Right.
The cars are lighter. It's a straight rail car, but the the geometry in the front end is a lot different
right.
than anything we're used to seeing. And it's all designed to make the car turn better in the middle. And that's stuff that we still struggle with, our old technology.
That's a good point, because in the last, I don't know, I'll say maybe 10 years, you started seeing bump stops starting to come into play where, you know, and really becoming the norm versus like a conventional setup and so on. But now you're seeing a progression from there onto something else now with some of these new cars like Jeremy Doss has.
And it's not even, there's still all those things that everybody's using, it's not new.
If you physics go, are still physics,
if,
right?
If you go back, and people have pointed this out to me, if you go back into things and look into books that you'll find from the 60s, they were talking about these little rubber things on the shocks and these little springs that are on the shocks. And those were all bump springs
right?
and bump
That's
stops.
True.
They may not have had the shim technology and all these
right.
things, but they were still talking about and using those things. So they've come around and used different things, but how they use them is different.
Different, right.
And the shock technology has changed a lot
oh, yeah.
because they didn't have shock dynos. I have a shock dyno in my garage.
Right.
They're not cheap.
Right.
They are very useful. And, I mean, you can, before I had one, you have all these instructions on how to change your shocks and what it's supposed to do, and you make the changes, you don't know if it actually did it.
You think it's doing what it's supposed to.
You have these people that you paid a bunch of money for to put all these shims together. It's like, okay, it does that. But sometimes when you make those changes and you put it on that machine, it says it did nothing.
Right.
And you're expecting those changes to do something on the car, and that machine says it did nothing, but when you don't know, you put it on the car, and it's like, okay.
And you don't know, now you're
I'm expecting something, and it didn't do anything, so we need to do something else. So,
not knowing that the shock didn't change at all.
Yes,
right.
And on our car specifically, when you have a shock that's malfunctioning and you don't know it, now you're chasing something else. Towards the beginning of the year, the shocks that I have on the car we bought used from Lenny White, there was some broken shims in the shocks that we found about halfway through the season,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't know they were broken. But I ended up putting them on the dyno and checking it out, and it ended up being, I mean, they were used, so
sure.
there was some problems in there. We took them apart and got them fixed, and they were much better after they were fixed.
Oh, I can imagine, right?
It didn't take near the adjustments that it needed before that when they weren't working right. It made a huge difference when they were fixed, but if I didn't have that machine to check them,
you would never know.
I wouldn't have known. It's like, here are these shocks, adjust it to here, put it on the car. It'll be great.
You know, a lot of guys don't have that luxury, I guess. They send them off. I know I've sent shocks off to Steve Teets before to have them revalved and checked and labeled, and they're not cheap, you know.
No, and
this stuff
and
is expensive.
These shocks, I think they're right at $1,000 a piece, and they pretty much tell you if you send the shock to get it rebuilt, you might as well just buy a new one for as much as it's going to cost to rebuild this one.
Right.
So I bought a used shock. Now I just have to go buy another one.
Right.
Question for you, Buzz. How long have you wrenched for Mr. Rocky?
It's been 4 years.
4 years?
That I've been working with Dennis on his cars.
But you've been wrenching for other people in the past.
Yes, I started in 95 or 2005.
And who with?
Scott Osborne.
Okay.
I moved here. I moved here and I had wild horses in Colorado. I sold all my horses and moved here and went to help him. He had two races left, went and helped him with a couple races. And then the next year he said, you know, help me with the car. In 2006, I helped him with the car for about half the season. I said, if we run all the races, we could win the championship, and we did it in 2007.
What did you think when you first started wrenching? I mean, were you like, hey, this is cool. I love you. Were you hooked?
I liked racing anyways. I mean,
yeah.
I raced 66 Bronco up in the mountains with a bunch of my buddies up there. We raced took threw money in a pot and said, the first one to the waterfall wins the money. And tore off
first
the
one
mountains.
Off the cliff is dead.
So with, you were with Scott Osborne and Dennis for 4 years. Now this year with Justin, wrenching for him with Dennis for 4 years coming back to you and saying, car needs this. Justin coming back. How was it working with Justin as far as communicating to you in comparison with Dennis with what the car needs?
We conspired with each other. And as far as I spot for Dennis, for Justin, I spotted for Scott Gaffarini, Scott Osborne, and some of the younger ones that were around. And as far as spotting and wrenching, it's making the changes on the cars and making the adjustments to whatever driver is saying the car's doing. If it's loose in, tighten the center, loose off, you have to start from the beginning and go through the corner. It's and each driver, some gets more of the feedback is more critical and more precise, which can make an adjustment and show an effect quicker, or it might take longer with another driver to get through that process to make the car faster.
Did you find that easier with Justin as opposed to Scott and Dennis?
You get more feedback from...
Hey, keep in mind the boss is here, so he's going to say Dennis is the best guy to adjust for. No, I'm just playing right now.
No, it's not that way. You can ask Dennis that.
You guys ever butt heads? I mean, hey, no, you got to do this.
Here's what it is. We were over in Madera, California, working on Kyle Keller's car, and the guy came over and said to John Keller, hey, are these guys going to fight? I want to watch them, man. we're going at it.
Yeah.
Yell and scream at each other, and then run over to Vince, get the car out, come back, and yell and work on the car. And we also work every day for our everyday work. So we work together. We leave work to go to work on cars, and we spend
a lot of time
together.
It's like a bad marriage. I'm sorry. But you can't split up. But, so
it's...
You're staying together for the kids.
Exactly. It's
yeah.
The business.
The cars.
The cars.
Yeah, the cars.
For the cars.
So did you spot for Justin this year? Were you
yes,
his
I did.
Spotter this year?
On and I off. Spotted. Not full time.
I spotted for Justin for all the races except for one.
Oh, cool.
Brian Kaiser spotted for one race.
Okay.
So, and the first race I spotted for him, Justin took off, went three wide twice, and whoa! As far as driver and spotter, I held my tongue when most of the time I wouldn't.
Right.
And
that's the difference.
Justin's
between...
more of an aggressive driver.
Right.
By far.
Yeah, he admits that.
And
you know.
Dennis seeing that and Dennis being around that made him a little more aggressive. And the aggressiveness and finesse in the car, there's times when I listened to Brian spot for Justin and Justin had to rein him in a little bit. And I picked up on that, but I wasn't as quick to notice that I needed to rein him in a little bit, slow him down, back
right.
off. Whoa, 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 easy. He'll set him up and go on. And,
you know, some drivers want to be told what to do and some want just the feed, you know, a little bit of feedback. Are there, you get an
Justin's, Scott Osborne wants me on the radio all the time.
Right.
Okay.
Every,
he wants you to
every
tell
single
him
corner,
that, right.
which when you're in a Lucas Oil modified race, as and it's bumper to bumper, and someone's hitting you or you're hitting somebody every single corner.
Right.
I'm on the radio and he never gets to talk.
Okay.
And if I don't talk to him, he says, is the radio broke?
Okay, that's Scott. Now, what about Dennis?
Dennis wants me to talk to him. If I don't talk to him during the race, then...
He gets lonely.
He goes to
sleep.
Wrong.
Yeah, he's taking a nap.
Dennis and Scott, that's their comfort, that hearing somebody talking to him, even though he can't see him, he has to have that, and it keeps him in his focus. Justin wants less of that. You don't need to tell me that every corner. You don't have to tell me that. Just tell me when they're getting close.
Okay. Is it easier spotting for Justin than Dennis and Scott, do you think?
It's harder to spot for Justin because he's more aggressive and things happen faster. So
okay.
It's happening faster, and I'm not saying nothing.
Right.
If I was already saying something, I can say it quicker
because
I'm already keyed up and saying something because it takes time for it to key up and come through. If I've already keyed up and I'm saying something, then it comes through once I say it instead of, oh, it's too late, now there's a wreck. Now we've been taken out of now we got a crashed up car. It's more
difficult. It's like a delay. They got me on a 5-minute delay. So.
Yeah, he deserves it, though. So
it's only about half to 1 second of a delay.
Right.
And that's all it takes.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
And
I mean, you're talking
that
they're wheeling these cars 14.9 seconds nowadays on a 3/8 mile track out here at LVMS. I mean, that's 1 second.
Yeah, 14.9 was the fast time. Now it's 14.4.
Can you believe that? Unbelievable.
But does Justin say you should have told me?
Only
if he does.
Only an altercation. Hey, this is
his
fault.
Yeah.
And then if he says, well, you should have told him. You should have been faster at it. Okay. That's fine.
Actually, his major complaint was when we were trying to get him down, that and I could hear it too, but it's hard to get somebody down when they're stuck hung up on the outside, and usually the biggest problem is by the time the spotter tells you there's an opening,
it's gone.
You can't get to them.
Yeah.
Or unless you can set it up so they're prepared to get into the spot. By the time you tell them, they're already committed to the outside.
Right.
Yeah. They can't just turn into that spot because they're driving this line. Well, if you can tell them, hey, there's a spot coming up, be ready.
Right.
Then they can be looking to get down there. But if you tell them, hey, there's a spot, well, I couldn't have got there unless you told me 5 laps back
right.
I was going to get
exactly,
there.
Exactly, right.
And that was Justin's complaint.
Ah.
Now, let's not take nothing from Justin. He's a great driver out there.
He is. He's a good driver.
And after he brought that to Buzz's attention, the next time, Buzz got him down.
Yeah. Hey, 3 laps from now, there's going to be an opening. Uh-huh. Well, look out for it, okay, Justin?
Approximately in between turn one and turn four.
It's all
is
in
it?
The
right.
Anticipation.
He's like, get ready,
happens.
Get ready, down.
Hey, are there any – I mean, you've raced against many different local drivers out there. Are there any ones that are easier to manipulate on the track than others? You know, some you can like kind of dip your nose in and you know they're going to react a certain way, or you can give them a little tap.
There are certain drivers who will do everything to stay in your way.
That's just everybody.
No. There are some who you can predict what they're going to do. They drive the same way. They make the same mistakes. You can just wait for that mistake to happen and see you and drive right by. And then there's others who drive the middle of the track who are really, really difficult to drive by.
Okay.
And then there are some who just park it in the middle of the corner.
Right.
And make it as hard as possible to get by, even though they know they're in the way.
Do you think there's anybody out there thinking the same thing about yourself or
maybe because I'm, and that's something I have to work on because I've been told I park it in the corner, and I would say that depends on the car I'm driving.
Well, exactly. And
because if my car's not working the best, I'm probably not going to be turning through the middle. And that's the thing. That's the difference I've seen with Justin. He can take a car that's not working good and he can still get through the corner.
Drive
with
it through. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And that's probably the best thing I have to work on the most is being able to get more out of a car that's not working well.
Right. What are the best years you think you've raced out there in the, whether it's super late model, super stocks, or anything like that? Your fondest racing moments out here at LVMS?
I've had probably 3 different years where I've finished second to Scott Gaffarini.
2 years ago.
The best one was 2 years ago.
Was that a situation where if you can't beat him, join him?
No, and I was and I raced out of his shop like for 5 years.
Okay.
And the best one was a couple years ago.
Right.
And I was in a situation where I could have beat him that year. My motor broke the last race of the year while I was leading the race. I had to win that race to beat him.
Oh, no way. And it came down to that.
And I
had
just passed for the lead, and the motor broke.
No kidding.
But there's for those that are listening, there's more behind that. And I want to bring this to light. 2 years ago, Dennis Rock Jr. won Sportsman of the Year.
Yes.
And his motor broke. And how Scotty got out there to win the championship was with Dennis's other motor.
Yeah, not many people will do that, doing some of the things that you've done out
and
there.
If I'm not mistaken, you even said, Dennis, and Scott said, that was your good motor that you lent him. Is that true?
It was one of my better ones. Basically, he had a backup car, and his backup car wasn't as good. And what I told him is if I was going to beat him, I wanted to beat him in his best car.
Wow.
So, and I had a motor sitting on the stand, and I said, here, put this in your car.
That's why I said when he said he had several good years, that's why I said 2 years ago. Yeah. And Dennis, the way Dennis is, for those who don't know him out there, you know, we'll go out and help, and along with Buzz, you know, it's an old saying, you'd rather beat somebody on the track, not in the pits.
Right.
But most of your work is done in the pits, and I commend you, Dennis, for doing that. Didn't have a chance to congratulate you 2 years ago. Congratulations, that. But he was the 2016 Sportsman of the Year. So, no, 15.
Yes.
2015 Sportsman
of the
Year.
Did you guys get your banquet tickets for this year already? You guys
have to buy them this week.
This week, okay. And I guess since we're talking about it real quick, November 4th. Is the banquet, and you want to RSVP to Tim Richter. Most people know how to get a hold of Tim that are going to be at the banquet. Tickets are $35 each, $10 or $300 for a table of 10. Of course, so RSVP, it's November 4th, 6 p.m. Tickets are on sale now. You want to get them in advance. You can also call 702-632-8059, but make sure you get your tickets, your tables reserved now. To help everybody out there at LVMS to kind of get things situated and know what they're working with. So, but before we run out of time, sponsors and, you know, of course, your own people you'd like to thank.
Yep. We don't do this by ourselves. I mean, the majority of the money that we spend on this, I spend that myself, but we do have people to help us. Adams Drive Shaft and Off-Road, they build all of our gears and our drive shafts for the car. J&S Engines builds all of our engines, and they build great power. They do all type of engine work, street cars, race engines, and they make great power. Mike with Cornwell Tools has been setting us up with a lot of help with our tools and our trailer setup for our cars. And Schaefer Oil came on board this year and has been helping us out with a lot of our lubrication products for our engine and our gear oil, and everything's been going really nice this year.
Now, that's good. Like you said, you can't do it without the help of a lot of people. Of course, a lot of money coming out of your own pocket. Is this the company you work for?
Yeah, ET&M Refrigeration. That's the company we work for.
Okay, and they help you at all? They let you use their car to haul to the track, or is that a no-no?
Actually, we do use the boss's truck to pull the trailers.
Okay.
He knows.
Okay, as long as he knows. It's funny, sometimes I'll see work trucks out there, I'm like, wonder if the boss knows.
Yes, he does. We a lot of times this year we ended up pulling two trailers, because we've had to use the backup car. I think we ended up using the backup car four times this year.
Wow.
And we had to pull two trailers, and I only have one truck, so we ended up using one of the boss's trucks to pull the other trailer.
That's pretty cool.
So, we hauled two trailers to the track more times than we didn't.
So, do you plan next year on maybe being in a car, or what do you guys? What's Dennis's team doing next year?
Right now, I'm planning on driving. I just don't know if we're having two cars or one.
So you planning on a full schedule possibly? Is that what you're thinking?
That's for sure. I just don't know if we're doing more than one car.
Justin want to come back, or is it you not sure with your knee?
We haven't talked about it yet, so I just don't know if we have the finances for two cars.
Right.
Okay.
So if you do, I mean, and not to, you know, I guess put any blinders on or not, if you do have the funding, you're going to race yourself in your own car next year. That's what the plan is?
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
All right.
Hey, you know, it goes all the way up to big time racing. You bring your own sponsors, you know, if you
Buzz,
time
you got,
to get a ring.
You have no more time. You're doing 60 hours a week at work.
Not anymore.
And,
the weather's too nice.
There is no sleeping for an hour and a half. That's
you can always
with two cars.
You can always sleep under the car.
You just gotta
make sure you don't
snore.
You
gotta move your
feet. I'm bad at starting a chainsaw.
Move your feet once in a while. It looks like you're working.
It's like, I got this, guys. You go home.
I've already
slide under the car.
I've already done the two cars. Actually, we started out with three cars going to the track.
That's crazy.
I've done two cars here, Madera.
Okay.
Two cars here, and Madera, and then here.
Are you guys done racing for the season? Or are you doing any out of town racing?
John was trying to convince us that we should run the SRL race in 3 weeks, but
is that at Kern, the big one?
No, there's one here.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The championship night. Yeah. I forgot about that. I'm sorry.
But,
what night is that on? That's in November, isn't it?
November 11th, I believe.
That's coming up pretty quick.
So I don't know how the finances are doing for that one.
That's a big a lot of money coming into that with the SRL guys, obviously, all the fast guys, and that's actually a points night for them too. So
yes.
Be some crazy racing that night. You ever thought about Buzz getting in a car? They ever let
you
kind of
take
anything?
I've been in a car a lot. I drove
not
cars
in the
around
seat.
A lot. I have not actually raced a car on a racetrack.
I'm sorry, Mike. Friday night got in.
That's the
18th. No, 18th. I won't do that unless I have the money in my pocket to fix it.
Hey, maybe
just driving a car out on the track.
Maybe one of these guys
destroyed.
Maybe one of these guys to get you in a bomber.
And I've seen that happen.
Well, these guys might be able to get you in a bomber for a practice night,
The car I want to take out on the track is a modified.
Do you? You just can't find somebody crazy enough to let you out.
I have a modified. I just got to get it put together.
Cool. Oh, there you go.
See? Sweet.
Yeah, Grand American, Lucas Oil,
American. It's the former 0Z car.
Okay.
Car.
Cool. What's Oz up to, man? I mean,
he's building a new car.
Cool.
He's been building a new car for a couple of years now, but hopefully he's got it, and hopefully we get it together so he can go back to racing next year.
Cool. Well, it's going to take too much time away from Dennis's program, so you're going to have a lot to juggle.
Well, I'm pretty good at it, really.
The
easiest way is to go pick the car up and take it out to this side of town.
Right. Now that's pretty good. Nobody probably knows this, but Buzz, he bought one of my old vans years ago. It was a van I loved. It's a little short wheelbase Chevy van. It
looked like Scooby-Doo's van.
Is that what do you guys call it?
They call it the Scooby-Doo van.
Well, you don't have a puff of smoke coming out of every time you open the doors, do you?
No. I'd be in the hospital if that was happening.
Any type of vehicle you buy from Mike would be called the mystery machine.
It did very well for me. It got me out of a... It helped me out because in 2008, the economy crashed. By 2009, I lost everything.
Yeah, I met Buzz back then, you know, good guy, hard worker, and, you know, all that good stuff. And, of course, I think a lot of people took a hit back then, and, you know, it's good that everybody's starting to recover and all that good stuff. So, but anyways, obviously, we could go on for hours. I appreciate you coming in, Dennis. We're running out of time again.
On such a short notice.
Yeah, exactly, on a short notice. So
thanks for having us here.
Yeah, hopefully you'll be back in again sometime in the near future.
Congratulations on your championship, Dennis, Buzz.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yep, everybody, you know, we'll see you guys at the banquet. And also, you were telling me November 18th is the championship night out here at LVMS.
West Coast Short Track Championship.
So that's November 18th. It's going to be a great race.
This weekend, NHRA Toyota Nationals, the big boys coming to town.
Starting Thursday, actually,
that's right.
All the way to Sunday. And then look at
that's
the time.
Right.
They're not as late as our usual times at the park track. You can go to LVMS.com, check it out there. always go to bombernation.com website on the message board. Thanks for joining us here at onwheelsnow.com. Thanks, Dennis, for being here. We're going to look out for you in the future. Good luck next year. And thanks, Buzz, for coming in.
Thank you.
See you next Tuesday.
Have a good night, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for listening.